So it's January 12th, 2019, about 1 week into our annual Abayagiri winter retreat, the time for us monastics, bhikkhus, samaneras, anagarikas, and the 8 lay people who have volunteered to be on the winter retreat crew. We have the opportunity to practice together. And it's a good time to get to know the workings of our minds. And so it can also be a struggle, and many different Ajahn Pasano teachings are coming up in my mind this evening. And one of them is just that something that's helpful during these periods of long retreat, because it's not going to happen that we're floating on a cloud of bliss the whole time, or even part of the time, but it's going to be up and down. And so one thing he would point to over and over again in the years and years of listening to his teachings was just paying attention to the experience we're having regardless of posture, and also to pay attention to what kind of experience are we hoping for or looking forward to, and how is that causing us suffering in the present. So we're doing many hours of sitting meditation, walking meditation each day. And for example, we might be doing the walking meditation, and I could see my mind doing this just yesterday, doing the walking meditation, and the mind kind of like, oh, maybe the sitting meditation will be better. And then sitting meditation, maybe walking meditation will be better. And this is just, the mind is just so completely ordinary. It's almost kind of funny how we hope for these really, really high experiences. Or just the mundane thinking mind. And if we don't yet have right view, we might think that these mundane thoughts that we're having mean that we don't have the Dhamma, or that we're defiled somehow. So if we don't yet have right view, and this is coming back to Lungpo Cha's teachings, if we don't yet have right view, then we might mistakenly see that any mundane thoughts we're having mean that we might interpret that as that we don't have the Dhamma, or that we aren't practicing correctly somehow. But what the right view is, and what we're always pointing to, is how we react to those mundane thoughts and how we hold them. That's where the right view comes into play, because all of those worldly thoughts and mundane thoughts, those are all just what we call vipaka, which is the result of past karma, past action. And we have no say in really, those are just going to come up. But where we do have a say is how we react to them, how we hold them, whether we follow them, whether we try to push them away. And right view in the middle way is what we call sati, sampajanya, or mindfulness. So that's what we really want to be focusing in on cultivating during this retreat. And what that is the way of defilement, or the way of mental obscuration, is to react in one of two ways when, say, we have a thought. Say it's a thought of anger, a thought thought of resentment. So that just comes up. So we could react by buying into it, listening to it, making more of it, and getting more angry, getting more resentful. So that would be the reaction of attaching to it. Or we could say, I'm not supposed to have anger, I'm a meditator, and push it away and try to destroy it, try to get rid of it. And that would be the worldly reaction of aversion. Or we could perhaps react in a third way, which would be, you know, I'm hopeless, I'm this way, I'm just an angry person, I'm just a resentful person, and that's just the way I am, and you know, I've always been this way, and other people have said I'm this way, and it's true, and so that's delusion. That's the reaction of delusion. Those are what the Buddha called the mulasava, the root defilements. That's it's translated as greed, hatred, and delusion, but we could also think of it as attraction, aversion, and delusion. So how do we react according to Dhamma? This is where we come back to knowing and letting go. So that's the Majjhima Patipada, that's the middle way, the middle path of practice that the Buddha discovered, and that's also mindfulness and clear comprehension, what we call Satisampajanya, or mindfulness and discernment, which would be Satipanya. That's knowing it. Very difficult to do. It takes practice. But just the right view is to know that that's how we're supposed to practice and to know that that's the correct way of practice. The correct way of practice is to know and let go. That was a mantra that Lumpur Cha liked to use. Know it, let it go. Know it, let it go. And that's the practice. So I can give a example of myself. Just today at the meditation, 1:30 p.m., so the first meditation of the afternoon, that period of time for me usually isn't good. Mine's not very bright. Mine's kind of dull. It's just sort of putting in the hours, and sometimes the mind can be kind of scattered for me at that time. But then if the mind is scattered, then we can always reestablish mindfulness. So if the mind is wandering or thinking of this and that, then whenever we come back to the knowing, then it's like, okay, I was thinking of this for the last 10 minutes. So I had this funny moment during the 1:30 p.m. meditation today where I realized for the last 10 minutes I was thinking about trucks. Well, okay, well, at least I know that I was thinking about trucks for the last 10 minutes. It wasn't so fuzzy that I don't know that, so then I can just say, okay, come back to the breath, come back to Buddho. I could have said, you know, well, let's keep thinking about trucks. This is really interesting. And that would have been attraction. I could have said, stop thinking about trucks. You know, that could have been aversion. Or somehow I guess I could have reacted with delusion as well. But just coming back to the knowing, coming back to mindfulness, okay, this is what was happening in the mind for the last 10 minutes. And that's just what it was. It's just empty. It doesn't really mean anything. It's just something that's ordinary, mundane. It's just the nature of the mind to think that way. I guess there kind of has to be a lightness too in the meditation to make it sustainable. So that ability to kind of chuckle or laugh at ourselves a bit, just kind of another Ajahn Pasano quote comes to mind, that I used to keep a little journal of Ajahn Pasano and Ajahn Amaro one-liners, and one that I wrote down in this little journal was, it was just something he said during a Dhamma talk a long time ago, was, if you're hoping for anything more than pathetic from samsara, then you're in for disappointment. If you're hoping it's going to be more than pathetic, then you're in for disappointment. So I could kind of say that to myself then during the meditation. Okay, well, this is just what the mind is doing. And then there's times where the mind is bright, or the mind gets still temporarily. And then again, it's coming back to Ajahn Chah's teachings on right view. It's like your mind gets really peaceful, your mind gets really still, and then the next day it's not there, and then you're really in trouble. You know, where did the peace go? Where did the stillness go? So if you don't have that right view that knows these things are always changing, they're just changing states, then you're going to have a hard time, because we're then going to be trying to somehow intellectually or mentally recreate that peace that we experienced. That, and the whole reason we experienced it is we temporarily let go of attachment and the mind got peaceful, but then we're trying to get back to it through attachment, so then we eventually have to give up again, and then we'll experience it again at some point whenever we give up. There's also this brilliant meditation teaching, the first sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, where the Buddha gives what I consider this perfect meditation teaching, where a deva comes and asks the Buddha, how did you cross the flood, meaning the flood of sensuality, the flood of craving? And the Buddha says, this is how I crossed the flood, by neither pushing forward nor standing still. That's how I crossed the flood. And the deva is confused and says, well, that doesn't make sense. Can you elaborate? And he says, well, the Buddha responds. He says, well, when I pushed forward, I was whirled about. And when I stood still, I sank. Therefore, I crossed the flood by neither pushing forward nor standing still. So he gives some insight into the subtlety of the middle way. But the way I see that teaching is, again, it's coming back to the knowing. Coming back to this, we're planting causes, we're putting forth effort, but it's like a balanced effort, and we have our meditation object, we have our themes of meditation that we're using as an anchor for the mind, and we have different contemplations that the Buddha recommended that we do. But we're not forcing too much, we're not pushing forward too much, and we're not completely, say, not having any desire at all. We have a desire to practice, so we aren't standing still, because then we would sink. So it's like having to actually cultivate certain types of desire in the practice. So there's these two types of desire. There's the wholesome desire and the unwholesome desire. And of course, the unwholesome desire is what's going to create what we call bad kamma, or it's the akusala, the unwholesome, unskillful, and that's what really results in suffering. And then we have wholesome kamma, which results in happiness. Unwholesome kamma, unwholesome desires would be things like greedily wanting to get something for ourselves at the expense of others, or some sort of angry desire, like a desire to get back at somebody. Those kind of desires are going to result in suffering. Then a desire that would result in happiness, a good example of that would be like dhammacanda. So that's the desire for Dhamma, the desire to practice, or the kusala chanda, wholesome wish, wholesome desire, such as a desire to give. So these result in happiness. Then there's the kamma leading to the ending of kamma. The Buddha defines that as the Noble Eightfold Path. Or in summary, you can summarize the Noble Eightfold Path as sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, meditation, mental cultivation, wisdom, discernment. Lungpo Cha had this thing where he didn't recommend that people study so much. A basic amount of study is good, but not to get lost in study. He recommended that a good way to get the information we need and learn how to develop right view is to both to practice and to be diligent in our practice, but also then to listen to the Dhamma talks, make use of the Dhamma talks, and have some sort of input from time to time that can keep us encouraged, keep us inspired, and keep the mind in the right track if we get into a rut. And that's also a very important function of the winter retreat, is to get out of any ruts that we might be in. So it's a really wonderful opportunity that we have this 3 months every year to get out of any ruts we may have found ourselves getting stuck in the last 9 months. So we've had a very busy year, 2018, and a very emotional year as well, with the fires and just a lot happening, a lot of changes, very emotional in terms of Lungpo Pasano leaving. I think the month after Lungpo Pasano left, I didn't go to a single meeting, whether it was a heart meeting or a business meeting, where somebody didn't cry during the meeting. It was just that's where we were all at. So a very emotional year, so lots of changes. So I know for myself, can get into different ruts, and trying to use this period of practice, this precious opportunity that we have, to get out of ruts that we might be in. And this reminds me of a story. It's a like a Native American fable where it's we have to be like the wise deer, not like the foolish deer. So the foolish deer, and this is something we can relate to because we have so many deer here in the mountain. And you'll notice their trails. They tend to follow the same trails. So the foolish deer, what they will do is they'll find a good trail and they'll just decide, okay, this is a good trail. They'll follow it over and over and over again until it develops into a rut. And one thing you'll notice sometimes if you walk up the trails here, especially when it's muddy, this is easier to see. I just saw this a couple days ago, walking up a muddy trail. You'll see the deer footprints, and then you'll see mountain lion footprints following the deer footprints. And so the mountain lion will notice, okay, there's a deer trail here. It'll start to get to know the trail. It'll know when the deer is walking on that trail, and it'll be tracking that deer. And so then you have the foolish deer gets eaten pretty quick by the mountain lion. And then you have the wise deer who knows that it's being tracked, and the wise deer doesn't get into ruts. The wise deer mixes it up. It follows one trail sometimes, but then it has alternate paths, and it discovers new inroads into the forest. And then that's the deer that survives and grows old, doesn't get eaten by the mountain lion. That deer is difficult for the mountain lion to find, because that deer isn't getting stuck in ruts. So, of course, it's the same with us. If we don't mix it up from time to time, and we don't get out of our habitual ruts that we find ourselves in, then Mara being the mountain lion in this case, the delusion can get us in various ways. So during these winter retreats, we tend to take on a certain theme to study and contemplate. And the theme this year is these anuruddha, these eight thoughts of a great man, seven of which are attributed to Anuruddha, and the eighth is one that the Buddha assigns to Anuruddha. Anuruddha, Venerable Anuruddha, is practicing, and a thought arises in seclusion of seven attributes of a great person. And the Buddha knows Anuruddha's mind, so appears before Anuruddha and gives him, and he says, those are good. Those seven attributes of a great person are indeed true. Here's an eighth attribute, and I won't name all of them right now. But in short, then, having assigned Anuruddha this eighth attribute of a great person, which was that a great person is one who delights in non-proliferation, this Dhamma is for one who delights in non-proliferation, not for one who delights in proliferation. And Anuruddha then spends the Vasa in that place and ends up attaining arhantship. But the first one, and in the winter retreat, we'll be going through these in order and just fleshing them out with suttas, readings, different teachings. And the first one, again, I was thinking of Longpo Pasano a lot in terms of this first attribute of a great person, is that and one who has Dhamma. This Dhamma is for one who is modest, not for one who is self-aggrandizing. So usually when we meditate, we're cultivating, say, like a calm, peaceful mind, calm body and mind, but rarely do we actually cultivate these Dhammas, like humility and being humble, being modest, and these are things which perhaps we might have as a part of our character, or we might end up cultivating just by virtue of the fact of being in the monastery, you know, developing these things through seeing good as examples or through osmosis, but rarely do we actually focus on them and cultivate them. And I think that's a bit unfortunate, because I know for myself, like things like gratitude, I had to consciously cultivate gratitude, and I can say now that I'm someone who has gratitude, but if I never consciously focused on that or consciously cultivated it, I never could have developed that. And so I think it's helpful then we have the time, like the winter retreat, to focus in on these things, take stock of where we're at in terms of our own inner character, and maybe we can develop and cultivate some of these things in addition to whatever practices we're doing in the meditation. So Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as, this Dhamma is for one who has few wishes, not for one who has many wishes. But the translation both Ajahn Kurudama and myself agreed on that seemed a bit closer was one for one who is modest, not for one who is self-aggrandizing, because then in this Anuruddha Sutta, the Buddha fleshes it out and says, how is this Dhamma for one who is modest? Here a practitioner, or here a bhikkhu thinks, here a bhikkhu is modest, but he doesn't think, may others know me as modest. Here a bhikkhu is content, but he doesn't think, may others know me as content. Here a bhikkhu is energetic, but he doesn't think, may others know me as energetic. And here a bhikkhu is dwelling in seclusion and delighting in seclusion, but doesn't think, may others think of me as one who delights in seclusion. And so on. So that you have these wholesome attributes of your character, but at the same time, not having the thought, may others know me in this way. So that's the first quality that Anuruddha came up with, was when he was alone in seclusion thinking, yeah, this is a quality of someone who has Dhamma. So there's other places in the suttas. There's a place where the Buddha talks about what's the quality of a true man, or a true, what's the quality of a true person. This is someone who will readily speak about their own faults, but not speak about the faults of others. And even when asked about the faults of somebody else, that person will only speak about it reluctantly. And on the flip side, they'll be quick to praise others, but they won't praise themselves. And when asked about good qualities that they themselves have, they'll only admit to them reluctantly. So that's a quality of a true person. So thinking of Lungpa Pasano, definitely living that particular way, seen it on so many occasions, either refraining from gossip or fault-finding, and also being quick to laugh at himself, make fun of himself. And it's just, it's incredibly rare, something we can take as an example in our development of this first aspect of someone who has Dhamma, being one who is modest. And anything we take on as a practice or try to cultivate, it's not going to happen quickly. And we're not going to change our character overnight, but it's something that we can do over time, especially in a 3-month period, or take a longer period. Much can be done in a year. But not to hope for like special shortcuts. I remember traveling in Ladakh with Ajahn Pasano in 2010, and they have these harrowing roads where you're driving through these mountains in the Himalayas, and they have these funny signs which are written in poor English, and by the Bihari Road Organization, the BRO. And there's these roads in one area where the road winds back and forth in like switchbacks up this giant mountain. And I remember having the thought, like, yeah, I guess if you were a really good driver, you could just take a shortcut. You wouldn't need to do the switch. You could just drive straight down the mountain and get down a lot faster. And then I saw this sign that said, shortcut will cut short your life. Thought, yeah, that's kind of true in the practice too. Or like in the reading today, it was a Westerner going to Lungpa Cha and saying, like, can you give me like some sort of shortcut to, you know, practice? And Lungpa Cha, like, say, if you're going to think like that, you may as well just give up now. So it's this sense of like the long enduring mind. the mind that can go for the long haul. And to be able to do that, it really comes back to just being able to have mindfulness and clear comprehension within the mundane experience of having a body and mind. So when we do walking meditation or sitting meditation, these are just very, very mundane activities. They're not exciting. And that's the whole reason the hindrances to meditation arise, because they're not exciting activities, and the mind that craves for adventure and excitement, then we might try to have different exciting thoughts or stories in the mind. And that's the whole thing. It's just coming back to the knowing, coming back to letting go of these things. And the different stories mind might be trying to tell us, or plans, like even though it's only 1 week into the retreat, we might even be planning what we're going to do after the retreat. And this is just totally normal. And just to always come back as much as possible just to knowing that that's what's happening in the mind, in the present. This only the experience in the present. Even when we're thinking about the future, we're thinking about the future in the present. So trying to tap into what's the mood, what's the energy, trying to go a bit deeper. How is the heart moving, or what's the deeper mood or emotion that's causing those thoughts? It may not always be what we think. The thoughts may seem very logical and rational, but they may be actually leading us somewhere where is a down some sort of dark road. But the road of light, the road where there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that's coming back to the knowing, coming back to mindfulness. And that's the Dhamma road. That's the road we want to be on. We could think of it another way, like taking on a period of practice like the winter retreat, like the vision quest, where what you do in the vision quest is, the whole reason you do it is you have a question that you want answered, or you have some sort of intention you want clarified. And so, say we were wondering, what should I do with my life, or what should I do in the future? So we've already thought ourselves to tears trying to figure it out with our thoughts, so we have to do a vision quest because we can't figure it out by thinking. So we've already thought of, along all the rational, logical lines, we've already thought ourselves into a real state, so we have to take the vision quest, say, okay, well, now I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to ask a question and listen. So that's what we're trying to do here too, is we're asking a question and then we're listening. We're listening for a direction, listening for an answer. We're not coming up with an answer ourselves. We're putting ourselves out there saying, well, what's right? What's in line with Dhamma? And then we're listening. That's where the punya comes in. That's where the wisdom and discernment comes in. And then when we listen carefully with mindfulness, clear comprehension, clear knowing, and discernment, then that's when that's when the new road opens up. That's when the real path opens up. Then suddenly we have a direction. So, moving forward according to our own likes and dislikes, according to our own thoughts and agendas, that's the Buddha saying, when I moved forward, I got whirled about. When I moved forward, I got whirled about. So that's like going according to our own preferences, our own likes and dislikes. So we have to ask that question, listen. But then if we just stop, if we mistake these things and think, okay, well, I just have to stop, not do anything, completely stay in the present, and then we sink. So that's like staying still. When I stayed still, I sank. So, but then when we see with discernment and mindfulness, then the Noble Eightfold Path opens up in front of us. So that's the direction we want to try to go. So I won't talk for too long, but these are just some random thoughts kind of bopping around in my mind for this evening, and I hope that people don't get discouraged, because this is a long period of time, and that we learn how to have a long enduring mind, and we can learn how to encourage and inspire ourselves to keep going, to not hold things in a very heavy way, that we have to get really strong experiences as quickly as possible, but that we just keep cultivating that mindfulness and keep seeing clearly, keep discerning. Okay, this is what we want to be doing. Knowing, just knowing, letting go, knowing, letting go. So I'll leave it there for this evening.